again, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm Brian DeNovellis, and how about Rutgers? Oorah, oorah. The Scarlet Knights faced as close to a must-win game in December as you can have, and they answered the bell. They had some big-time individual and team performances in this one. We're going to talk Rutgers as, yes, they got a quad one win over a very good Penn State team. Now, Princeton, they got a win in similar fashion in that they held off a fight from Monmouth at the end. They needed all 40 minutes to hold off 1-9 Monmouth every single last second. But you know what? They got the win. Just like Rutgers, they got the defensive stops late to seal the victory. And a win is a win, and you need those all throughout the year. I'll also sit down with the head coach of the first place team in the Ivy League. That's right. Columbia head coach Jim Engels will come on the podcast for the first time as his 10-1 Lions break for final exams. It'll be great to catch up with Coach Engels, who's really had quite a career as a college basketball assistant and head coach. Can't wait to talk to Coach and catch up with him. Plus, we'll get into the MAC conference as conference play is tipped off. And we'll get to all of that in just a bit. But first, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of Remax Revolution. He is a trusted name in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth, Ocean counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577, and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. And joining me now is the head coach of Columbia, Jim Engels, whose team is off to a sizzling 10-1 start, including an upset of Villanova. This is their best start to a season since they went 13-1 to begin the 69-70 season. I'm not old enough to remember it, but I was born in 70, so that was a good year. Coach, welcome to the podcast. Great to talk to you. How are you?
Oh, great, Brian. Thank you for having us on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I mean, listen, you guys deserve it. When you have the season like you're having, Coach, and look, you've been building for this, right? You came to Columbia in 2016, and you had some lean years there, you know, years where you're trying to build and struggle and get some stability. Last year, 4-10, showed signs of trending up in conference play, and now this. How about what you're trying to build here and the fact that everybody stuck with you and you stuck with what you believe in?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. It's definitely been a process, over the course of, a little bit of the journey that we've been on. These guys, especially the team we have right now, these guys came in as freshmen, and a lot of these kids were pretty highly recruited, and we've gotten some good players that have turned down a lot of good options basketball wise, but have understood the end game with a Columbia degree. They come in and they think, as most of these kids do, that they have all the answers and everything's going to be easy. And it just takes a while. They have to physically and mentally mature, and these kids have stuck with it. And, last year was really the first year that we started to see the progress from an outward perspective. We had a good non-conference. We started 4-4. We unfortunately lost 6 in a row to end the season. But a lot of that, hinged on a couple of possessions here or there, which is really what basketball is about. So the experience that these guys have gotten has been invaluable. And, I think it's really shown up this year. We have a team now that is really junior and senior heavy. And because of all the different stuff that they've gone through and sticking with it, which is a credit to them, has really now you're seeing the outside is starting to see the progress that we were trying to build.
Yeah, excellent point. I'm sure those within the Ivy League, saw what was coming. They predicted Columbia fifth in the preseason poll behind, Princeton and Yale and Brown and Cornell. But look, I know the Ivy League hasn't started yet. I want to talk about that in a little bit. But you brought something into play here. You start 4 juniors and a senior. And Geronimo Ruby De La Rosa did I say that right? I always get his name wrong, right?
Yes.
Geronimo Ruby De La Rosa is one of the top seniors in the country, certainly in the Ivy League. He has put his name up there. National recognition, was named Oscar Robertson Player of the Week after scoring 37 points against Stony Brook. but you also have four very good juniors, and all of them, like you said, started out as freshmen. So all five of your starters, correct me if I'm wrong, have been here since freshmen, and they know the program. And that's, in this day and age of NIL, that is almost, an anomaly.
No, it really is. And that's a lot of the kids don't understand the jump from high school to college, and I sort of put it this way with some of the guys right now when they come in. I say, hey, if you were sitting here and you went back and played against some sixth graders, right? Because when our guys were coming in, we had a bunch of freshmen running around, and we were playing against guys who these kids were playing against 24-year-old men. And as you get to become our age, 1 year in our life is not a big deal, but at their age, 1 year is a huge, it's a huge difference, And so these guys stuck with it. They understood it. We had some challenges, but the league itself, because of the rules we have, you have to stick with the process of what these guys have to go through. And so again, it's just a credit to the resiliency and to their commitment to what this is, because you have to stay together. And the one thing that I've also told the guys is, if when you watch the NCAA tournament every year, a lot of these good mid-major programs, they wind up beating these high major programs because they have teams that have been together. They've seen their senior leading teams that beat these, like Kentucky. What happens it happened with in New Jersey, right, with a couple of our teams, with St. Peter's and then obviously with FDU. They had two big upsets in the tournament over the most recent years. So there's a lot to keeping the guys together and in being able to keep them together. And Geronimo was the guy who stepped on our campus as a freshman, he came in to a program that had nine new guys and didn't really know. He's from the Dominican Republic, and jumping up to coming from where he was with the pandemic, we never saw him play in person. We actually watched him play, and with one of the advantages that we had during the pandemic, because they shut our season down, the Ivy League shut our season down, like we were able to actually watch a lot of film on kids, and that's how we did most of our work. We did it remotely, and we were just watching recruits play. And he happened to be in one of the states that played. Texas played most of their games, so we were able to watch a pretty good subset of what he did. And we got lucky. It was just really just working hard, and he came in and was been our best player since he's jumped on campus. And now you're starting to see, he's starting to get a lot of recognition, which he really deserves. He's grown into his body physically and mentally. He's grown into becoming a really good basketball player, and he's getting a lot of the help now that he deserves from his teammates. So
Yeah,
it's really fun to watch.
no doubt, Coach. He's putting his name up there with John Poulakidas from Yale, and obviously we see Xavien Lee here in Princeton, and Keno Lilly Jr. with Brown. You have a great point guard and Avery Brown, one of the top point guards in the league. Kenny Nolan is double double or at least double figures a lot of games. So the supporting cast is there, Coach. The win over Villanova, I think that's what brought my attention and a lot of college basketball fans' attention in the area. Villanova is not Villanova of Jay Wright, but it's still Villanova. They're still very good. They still have, one of the best players in the country in Eric Dixon. To go in there, game two, I'm just going to set the stage for the listeners here, right? You open up with a great win against Loyola of Maryland on the road on November 4th. One day to prepare for Villanova, then you go to Villanova, very difficult place to play, and you beat them soundly. All right, what did that do, and how did you beat them?
Yeah, it's the beginning of the season, and I touched on a little bit too. Like, Villanova, Eric Dixon, he reminds me of Julius Randle. He's literally I mean, I don't know how the NBA picks their kids, but
Right.
he's an unbelievable NBA talent, just from what he can do. And being a Knicks fan and watching Julius Randle, he reminds me of him.
Excellent.
We knew that he was going to be a pretty big challenge for us. We had heard that he had like 37 and like 30 something in his scrimmages, and but we were really focused on that first Loyola game. Just really, just the first game of the year, you don't know what to expect with different teams. Loyola has a new coach, and so we were trying to figure out exactly how they were going to play and the style of play and what to prepare for. So a lot of our stuff was really just focused on that first game, and then we took a trip and we went down to Baltimore, and we were able to win that game. We actually able to come back in the last 8 or 9 minutes and sort of take that game. And I think a lot of the reason why we have had some consistency this year is because a lot of these teams don't have consistency because of the transfer portal. You have a lot of new guys who come in. You know, a lot of these coaches have to rebuild their cultures, and they have to get a bunch of guys who've come from different programs, and you got to put them together very quickly. And so there's a lot of challenges from a coaching standpoint in all the different programs that we go up against now. But that Loyola game was great because it allowed us to really learn a lot about ourselves in that one day. We actually stayed in Baltimore after the game. We had a great film session the next morning, watched the game, and really sort of built on some of the stuff that we needed to work on. Credit to the guys. They really learn, and they're willing to learn. And so we learned a lot from that game, and then we went to Villanova, and like you said, it was one day prep. We really didn't know much because we hadn't seen much from them. They had played Lafayette their first game of the year, so we watched that game. But you know, going into the game, it was really just trying to build on what we were trying to do. So we didn't really talk much about Villanova. We did talk about Arik Dixon and trying to figure him out, but we didn't do a very good job, by the way. I think he had like 35 against
Well,
us. So
neither did Kevin Willard in Maryland. So, but they found a way to win. He's I think the second leading scorer in the country right now.
I walked up to him after the game. You know, I said to him in the handshake line, I was like, "Dude, if you need an agent," he goes, "I already got one." So I was like, okay. So I just kept walking.
That's it.
But
I already got
that,
one. He
yeah, it was
kept
perfect, perfectly put. I was like, "Yeah, I know." And so,
he wasn't in the mood to talk.
no, he wasn't. It really wasn't. And so no, but the game, you know, obviously, I wasn't shocked at what we were able to accomplish. After the game, a lot of people were like, it was amazing. You know, when I was at NJIT, we were blessed to be able to go to Michigan and beat
Yeah,
Michigan at the time.
when
And it
they were
was
ranked.
when they were ranked, yeah. And it was a huge, huge upset at the time. And I remember getting in. We were obviously getting on. We had to fly back to Newark that day because it was a 12 o'clock in the afternoon game. I got on the bus, and I must have had like 500 text messages. It was shocking. I was just trying to process everything,
Yeah.
and it was a lot. When we beat Villanova, it was pretty much the same type of reaction. And so when we won the game, you know, a lot of people tell me, "Hey, you know, you scored 90 against Villanova. Villanova never gives up 90." Or, you know, you guys really executed, and you've done an unbelievable job. And you know, in reflecting on it, you know, it was a great win, and you know, really proud of the way the guys responded. And it was great because it was the beginning of the year. It happened to be on TV. A lot of people actually watched it, and you know, I think the guys deserved it. You know, we've done a lot of work behind the scenes to get to this point, and you know, we still have a lot of work to do, but the fact that we were able to win the game and compete at the level we did, you know, I thought it was just great for our guys, for people to notice and say, "Hey, you know, this is a Columbia team that's, you know, hopefully on the rise, and that can hopefully make some noise this year."
Yeah, and I think you're trending in that direction, Coach. Without question, you've served notice when you can win games like that. I'm going to backtrack. I have to ask you because in Baltimore, you said you stayed over. Did you go to my? It's right down the street from Loyola. Did you go to my favorite all-time breakfast place, Miss Shirley's?
Ryan, as a coach, you never leave the room. Come on, dude. Like, you're like my mom. My mom still thinks that in the summertime, like, I just go, like, I don't have a full-time job. She's like, "What do you do in the summertime?" Or she'll ask me to come over, and we'll have a game that night. And it's like, "Well, how come he's not here at this if I miss a holiday or something like that?" So come on, Brian, you got to know better. We just hole up into the we just get into our room,
Yeah,
we just do work the whole time.
I was
No,
hoping that
I'm just kidding.
maybe you circled something and said, "All right, just have you been there though? Have you been to Miss
I
Shirley's?
haven't. No, I
All right,
haven't.
just remember it. If you know that one day out of the year, one out of 365, that you might have some free time and you're not golfing or doing something else in Washington, D.C. or Baltimore, trust me, you will thank me. Miss Shirley's, it's like top 10 breakfast place in the country."
I will definitely do that. I appreciate that. Thank
All
you.
right, yeah. You're lucky just to get coffee and a bagel if you're lucky, right?
Right.
So, all right, so you beat Villanova. All right, let's talk about one of the. It's not going to be a low, but the team was 9-0, riding a high, and you go up against an Albany team, and I knew that game would be dangerous. The Great Danes are, tough place to go on the road. You lose there, suffer your first loss of the season, and only loss to this point. What did you learn about the team, and how happy are you? You know, how you've responded since with two wins.
Yeah, and you're right. I knew that Albany game was, as we started to, as the season starts to roll on, obviously you have to plan out your practices and plan, what you're going to do. And, I saw the Albany date, we had some time off. We had some time to prepare for that game. But, the big thing for our guys now is the mindset of what this is. This process now was physical, and it was getting stronger and getting mentally stronger and educating themselves and learning how to play the college game on a night in and night out basis. Now it's really about mindset. And we knew as a staff going in, like, Albany was going to be ready. They got a good team. They got some really good transfers and they're very talented. And we talked about it with our team. And I think the big thing that our guys have come to understand over the last 2 weeks is, like, hey, when you're playing the way you're playing and you're getting some positive notoriety, some positive reflection and some positive feedback from people on the outside, like, now you become an important game. We went into Albany and they shot like 67% in the first half. They had five offensive rebounds. Like, they must have averaged almost 2 points per possession for the first half. I remember walking up to one of my friends on the staff at halftime coming out, and I said to him as I was passing by, I was like, I didn't realize we were playing the Knicks today, and he looked at me like I was crazy. But that's what we our guys need to understand, that, like, the mindset now is like, hey, this is becoming an important game for teams, because they're seeing us on the schedule and they're going to bring their best game now. And so for us, it's really been important to understand that. And now, from the prep standpoint and from the mindset standpoint, there's a lot of things that we have to learn. So I thought the Albany game, we got a lot out of it. Obviously, we wanted to win it, but we got a lot out of the loss. We were able to learn a lot again from that. And we've had some very good workouts and some good practices, and we've learned a little bit more about ourselves, like we talked about with the Loyola game. And now we go into break, with an idea of some of the stuff that we have to improve upon as we go into our conference play.
So for those who don't know, the Ivy League, all the teams break for exams. Like you can go 3 weeks without playing a game. So your last game, you beat Division III Sarah Lawrence Monday night, and now you don't play again until, December 28th against Fairfield. That's nearly 3 weeks, Coach. How do you handle that? Obviously, you've been through it before, but for those of us who don't know, how do you handle that, and when do you come back? And you have Christmas in there.
Yeah, well, number one, from a personal standpoint, being 10-1, it makes the holidays a lot more fun for me personally. So
yes,
I'm going to enjoy, I'm going to enjoy the holidays. But from a team standpoint, I was talking with one of my assistants, a good friend of his is an assistant for one of the NBA teams. And they were like, yeah, we call them blackout days. So they actually, in the NBA, they actually give their guys a day off completely. No one's allowed in the office, and no one's staff, no one, the team, they don't want the guys in the gym. And so going into last night's game, I was thinking, maybe, we got this time off here. We start finals now, so we're not allowed to do anything from a game. We can't play games during finals, but we will practice. And I said to my staff, I'm thinking about giving these guys 4 days off, as long as everything goes well with our game on Monday. So after the game, I told the guys, hey, I got an early Christmas present for you. And they all were like, oh, what is this? And I said, I'm going to give you guys the next 4 days off. And one of my senior captains goes, whoa, 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 whoa. He walks up to me and he puts his hand on my forehead. He goes, are you okay? And I was like, please leave me alone. I'm going to give you 4 days to reset. Don't want you guys in the gym. I don't want you in the weight room right now. I want you guys to focus on taking a couple of days here, getting set for finals and making sure that you're set. And then we'll come back on Saturday and refocus for going in for our last two non-conference games after Christmas. So, we're able to use some of this time now, hopefully productively, to get these guys a little bit of a break physically, also for them to reset mentally. And then, just to be extremely well prepared for finals, so they can, and then we can focus. The best thing about college basketball is we have the, once you go from the fall semester to the spring semester, you have that in between winter period, and
Yeah.
makes our sport unique because, with those 3 or 4 weeks that you have, it's just all basketball. So we just plan a lot of team building stuff. We'll do some things with our teams. We're going to take our team to a Broadway play. We're going to go. We'll probably go see a Knick game or a Net game. We'll do some community service stuff. But the time that they have now is really, it's just really solely focused on basketball. So once we get through the finals, we'll be able to really do some good things with our guys in between, especially being in New York. It's a huge advantage being in New York City with all the different cultural things and social things that we could take advantage of for our guys. So, we will use these next few days and the next 3 weeks to get our guys reset again.
Yeah, how refreshing is that? You know, the life of a student athlete, and we don't think about these things, but it's just nice to hear that. You know, they're going to Columbia and they're really getting an education, but an experience, right? You're right there in New York City on the upper side there, and it's great to hear that. You're it sounds like you're enjoying your time at Columbia, coach, and you're showing the players how to enjoy it as well.
No, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, I mean, listen, we're extremely blessed. Columbia has every advantage you could have. We talk about pride in Columbia all the time as one of our standards and one of our values. And as these kids, but at basketball is a unique sport. From a media perspective, these kids are inundated with different messages. Transfer is the big thing now. Money is the big thing. We are definitely trying to fight for what the experience is supposed to be, why Columbia is important, what the end game is with Columbia. So, New York becomes a real big part of their education, and that location and being in the location that we have, like, going to see Hamilton, or going to see a Knick game, or doing some community service at the local food bank. Like, these are things that I know people probably will think I'm a little crazy when I say this and probably think negatively about this, but I remember more about the time that I spent with my teammates off the court than I did in the classroom, unfortunately. Now, I wasn't the greatest student in the world, so there's probably guys on my team that will have a better relationship with their teachers, but our guys, the experiences that we can give these guys off the court, I think, are things that they'll talk about a lot with their kids when they grow up.
Yeah, well said, coach. Your career has taken you to so many different stops, and you've played, you played at Dickinson College, but then when you started coaching, I mean, you coached under some pretty good coaches there. You know, you Wagner with Tim Capstra, Ryder with Don Harnum, some winning, great seasons there. And how did those lessons there, prepare you for NJIT? And if people don't know, you took NJIT, I think, in their second or third year of second year of Division One, and had a winning record there, which at a low major, to have a winning record is insane by the time you left there. So I know I've talked about a couple of moments there as an assistant coach and head coach, but how did all of these experiences get you to where you are today?
Yeah, I've just been really lucky. I when I went to Dickinson, I had a great experience, played D3 basketball, learned a lot, built some great relationships with my coaches and with my friends, and I always wanted to be a coach, and not knowing how it worked, sent out my resume, basketball resume, along with my academic stuff to all the different Division I schools when I was graduating. And it was fun because I would go to our mailbox, and kids don't really go to their mailbox anymore, but I would go to my mailbox, open it up, and there would be like recruiting letters in there. There'd be letters from St. John's and Kentucky and Louisville and Georgetown, and I'd get all the form letters, and all my teammates would laugh,
Yeah.
and it would be great. And obviously with the passing of someone like Lou Carnesecca, when I would, I'm from Staten Island, so St. John's was my team. When I grew up, they were the team that I wanted to be like Chris Mullin, right? And
Great point.
with Coach Carnesecca passing, obviously it's a big loss for not only the New York City basketball community, but for the basketball community as a whole. But growing up and seeing those letters from like a Lou Carnesecca, and He actually hand wrote his note, which shows you a lot about his character when he told
Really?
me that he did not have a position. So
He wrote to you. He wrote to
it was a
you.
quick handwritten
How about
note. Yeah,
that?
it was great. And so I got into coaching. I went to Wagner on Staten Island, and I was there for 7 years. Worked for Tim Capshaw, who Tim was now is the color guy for the Nets on
Long time, yeah.
and Tim hired me and allowed me to sort of grow. He gave me a lot of responsibility, which really was invaluable at my age. To be able to do a lot on and off the court. I was there for 7 years, and I went to Ryder for six. Worked for Don Harnum. Don, it was a great step up. Don and Tim were very close friends, so I got the opportunity when Don became the head coach there to move on with him, and had a wonderful time there. Learned a lot more about Ryder. Was every program's in a different phase and in a different life cycle, and they had just had a lot of success. Kevin Bannon just left to go to Rutgers, and Don took over the job. So learned a little bit more about the business there, and then was able to become an assistant at Columbia. And the reason why I wanted to come to Columbia was because I really just wanted to be a Division III head coach. I wanted to be the head coach at Dickinson College at some point, and I thought getting an Ivy League school on my resume would sort of make me a little bit different, give me a different
Wow.
identity. And went to Columbia and had no idea what to expect, and was blown away by the experience. Just the basketball experience itself. There's so much that you have access to. We can really recruit anybody we want just because of the location and because of our academic reputation. And then being at Columbia for 5 years, it got me the head coaching job at NJIT. And then going to NJIT was an unbelievable experience because being a head coach for the first time, trying to take a lot of the things that I had learned from the people that I worked under, and was able to, that first year, we didn't win a game. We were 1-30, and we broke that 51 game. We broke that losing streak, and it was an unbelievable, not just going, but thinking back on reflecting on it, was just crazy to understand, the enormity of what we were going through. It was in seeing these kids and taking over that team, you saw just a lot of the frustration and just a lot of the, the guys were just down. They just wanted to win a game. They just wanted to be normal team. And we won that one game, and we were able to become a normal team again. People sort of left us alone, and we were
Yeah, you
able
made
to
national
survive.
attention for the losing streak. It was a
National
51.
attention went away. Yeah, so we were able just to become just another team, and the guys were able to grow, and we were able to make some pretty good strides through the hard work of our staff and through the hard work of our team, and we got better and better. And then we had a lot of success, and it really just opened up the opportunity for me to come back to Columbia. So I'm very grateful for my experience in NJIT. Actually, this Saturday we'll be going back, and they're celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the Michigan win. So it'll be great to go back. I just don't get a chance to go back there much, and it'll be great to go back and meet, see with to sit with Lenny and all the people there at NJIT that really helped me and helped our program. To help us have the success and to allow me the opportunity to move on to a place like Columbia. So it'll be fun for us to reconnect, and I'm looking forward to that. So
Yeah, it's almost like the program that Jim Engels built, the house that Jim Engels built, and you're going to go to that arena over there, and hopefully, do you have a good relationship with Grant? And what do you think, Grant Billmeyer? How do you think he's done over there?
well, when I left, my assistant Brian Kennedy took over, and then Grant now has the job, and I'm really again, I know Grant just from recruiting and seeing him around, and I'm really happy for him. I know it's being taking over a program, you have to put down your culture and put down, it takes a while, just like I said, just what I've gone through here at Columbia. And I know they really like Grant, and they really support him. And I'm just really excited to again just to go over. The arena is beautiful, and it'll be. I haven't had a chance to reconnect with a lot of the guys on the team from. So it'll be good to go over and just reconnect with those guys and just reflect a little bit on some of the things that we were able to accomplish when we were there.
Awesome. Back-to-back 21 seasons in 2015, 2016, before you came to Columbia. So, coach, as we wrap up this conversation, really appreciate the time. Columbia, you know it. The kids know it. Columbia hasn't won an Ivy League title. They have one. I believe it's 1968. I don't know. Do you talk about that kind of stuff? And is this a year with this group that Columbia can make the Final Four of the Ivy League and challenge for a title?
We certainly hope so. Yeah, I mean, we've really been building towards this. There's a lot of things that are, sports is a, it's like life. There's a lot of things that are very uncontrollable in what you do. So you have to maintain that mindset and just stay with the things that you believe in and just, stick with them. So, we will try to do that with what we've been going through up to this point. But yeah, I mean, we talk about winning a championship. You have to have those goals. That's why we play this game. And the guys have really bought into all the things that go into, putting yourself in the best position to win a championship. We have to continue to improve. We have to get better. Our guys have to continue to improve. We have to develop some of our bench and get our guys, get some of these younger guys up to speed. But I like, again, I like, we talked about it. I like where we're sitting with the basketball standpoint. I like how our guys are sort of handling the different experiences, talking about the mindset now of being a team on our schedule. Playing our next game is at home against Fairfield, and then we got to go to Rutgers. So there's still two very challenging non-conference games to get us prepared for the league. And then now we have to go into the league again with a new learning aspect of, hey, going into the league with one of the best records in our conference. And how is that change, and how does that change our prep? How does that change the outlook, and how does that change all the different things that go with the expectations? And it should be a fun and interesting time for our guys.
Yeah, it's a great experience for Columbia. Congratulations on the success early on, coach, and continued success. We have those dates circled on our calendar, right? December 28th against Fairfield, December 30th against Rutgers. Columbia will be in action both games. And, thanks so much for coming on and reconnecting with you. And Merry Christmas to you and your family, coach.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian. I really appreciate you having us on. Happy holidays to everybody out there, and hopefully get a chance to see you maybe at the Rutgers game.
Yeah, I will see you there, coach. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Yes, sir. Columbia, one of the surprises, not only in the Ivy League, not only in the tri-state, but in the entire country. And as I just discussed with Coach Engels, should we really be all that surprised by a team that starts four juniors and a senior, all of whom have been with Columbia since their freshman year, under the same head coach and in the same system? In an era of NIL, Columbia is the exception and not the norm. But I don't care what era you're talking about. Experience matters. This is a blueprint that will always, always produce winning results more often than not. All right? Recruit, retain, develop. And when those players are juniors and seniors, you've really got something to work with because they understand what it's like to go through the grind of a 30-game regular season, to go on the road, to play two games in 3 days as they do in the Ivy League, week in and week out. They know what it's like to go into hostile environments and having to grind out a win on the road when the fans and the refs are against you. It takes time. When these players were freshmen, they took their lumps. We talked about that. But now they're seeing the fruits of their labor, and their reward for staying with the program, staying with a coach, believing in them. And that's why Columbia is 10-1 heading into their break. With, look, a chance to get to 11 wins should they beat Fairfield and then go into the rack and take your chances against a Rutgers team that will certainly, certainly not overlook them. All right, let's talk about Princeton, shall we? Because they're another team in the Ivy League that's right there with Columbia. But look, they've had their shares of ups and downs the first month of the season. All right, coming off a great road win against St. Joe's and then a tough home, a tough away loss at Furman. Where would Princeton be against a 1-9 Monmouth team that was looking to upset and win their second game against the New Jersey foe? And Monmouth was right there every step of the way in this game. I mean, this game was a coin flip from the opening tip, and Princeton was. They were a 14.5-point favorite. All right, but to show you what kind of a game this was, seesaw affair. There were 25 lead changes in this game. There was no team that broke away and built any kind of a lead in this game. And credit to Monmouth, credit to this team that the start of their season has just been brutal, trying to, you know, win games on the road one after another, haven't played a home game. And they have one win in 11 games. It's got to be brutal, but they keep showing up. They keep battling. And they gave Princeton all they could handle. And Abdi Bashir, everybody knows about him. Certainly, if you've listened to this podcast, you know, and if you follow college basketball in this area, Abdi Bashir is a star. He is going to be on the all-metropolitan area team at the end of the season. All right, but he can't do it alone. He needs a supporting cast. And still, everybody knows the scouting report, and yet he keeps putting up numbers. 26 points in this game for Bashir. But it was a defensive stop late. All right, Princeton hit big shots late in this game, and they did it from the three. Xavien Lee did a little bit of everything. 23 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds. It was his three to put him up 62-61 with 2 minutes to go. Monmouth hit free throws, and then with Princeton down one with a minute to go, it was a three-pointer by Blake Peters, his fourth three-pointer of the game. He finished with 14 points. That was the hoop. That was the bucket that put Princeton ahead for good with a minute three to go. We know Princeton is going to hit a lot of threes. First half, they didn't. 3 for 12. Second half, they found their stroke. 7 for 18, including, like I said, two huge three-pointers in the final couple of minutes of this game. Peters put him ahead for good, and then still Monmouth wouldn't go away. It was still a one-possession game with under 10 seconds to go, and Monmouth was down by two, and Abdi Bashir turned the ball over. Malik Abdullahi, the freshman for Princeton, played outstanding defense, and that was the difference. Bashir, as great as he was, that was his sixth and final turnover in this game. Monmouth falls again. They're 1-10. And Princeton survives. Princeton gets a win in a close game. And this can help a team grow. They found a way to win a game when they weren't at their best. They hit big shots late and got one final defensive stop to seal the deal. So good for Princeton. It's going to be very interesting in the Ivy League. All right, it's going to be very interesting. Brown just handed Rhode Island its first loss of the season. Rhode Island was riding high. And I know Brown's not in our coverage area, but to beat Rhode Island, which was 9-0, and to win their sixth consecutive game, a huge double overtime win. I mean, Brown going into Rhode Island, which had just beaten Providence, right? You see where I'm going with this? So, huge win for them. Mike Martin can really, really coach. They have one of the best players in the Ivy League, as you know, in Keno Lilly Jr. So, Brown is cooking. Yale's going to be right there. John Pulakitis leading the Ivy League in scoring. Columbia's right there. Princeton right there. Let's not forget about Cornell. I mean, this Ivy League is wide open, wide open. And now they break for exams and take a couple of weeks off and get ready for their next games. Princeton's next game, oh, by the way, December 21st against Rutgers at the Prudential Center. If you don't have tickets yet, get them. That should be a fun one in New Jersey. The Never Forget Tribute Classic, noon, December 21st at the Prudential Center. Rutgers taking on Princeton. I will be there. And speaking of Rutgers, boy, did they come through. All right. This is a team that hadn't played a home game in 19 days. They were on the road And Steve Peichel, oh boy, was he glad to be home. This is a team that had lost three straight, 4 of 5, and they were playing a Penn State team that is very good, very well coached, very skilled. And it's a quad one opportunity, which Rutgers had not had all season long. Penn State coming in the top 15. I believe they were 13 in the net after beating Purdue, a team that was averaging 90 points a game, the number one scoring team in the Big Ten. And Rutgers got exactly what they needed, a little slice of home cooking at Jersey Mike's Arena. Let me just say, the crowd was into it. There was not an empty seat in the house. The students were standing the entire time. The building was loud. Even early in the first half, they were into it. Best crowd of the season at the rack. They knew the importance of this game. Rutgers knew the importance of this game. And the crowd was a big factor in helping Rutgers win it. The first 20 minutes, Rutgers played their best half of the season. They challenged shots at the rim. They made life difficult. They played their best defense. Ace Baldwin Jr., you heard me talk about him last podcast, and if you know the Big Ten, you know the name. The defensive player of the year in the Big Ten last year. One of the top 20 finalists, or I should say nominees, for the Bob Cousy Award for best point guard in college basketball. Ace Baldwin is a player, and he really does a great job averaging 8 assists a game. But it was Jamichael Davis and not Jordan Durkack in the starting lineup. Steve Peichel said that Jamichael Davis had been playing great in practice, and he made a calculated move to put Jamichael Davis on one of the best point guards in the Big Ten, and it paid off. And you know what? Jordan Durkack, being the team player that he is, whatever you need me to do, coach, came off the bench and had a heck of a game as well. Ace Baldwin was clearly frustrated. He missed 3-4 layups in the first half, was looking for fouls. You're not going to get calls on the road in college basketball. It just doesn't happen. Rarely happens. So don't look for them. Between Davis and Durkack and company, they made life difficult for Ace Baldwin all game long. Shut him down. So credit Rutgers there. He finished 3 for 14, 8 points. His worst game of the season. So Rutgers did it defensively in the first half, and they were hitting the three. Boy, were they hitting the three. I mean, the ball was moving. PJ Hayes off the bench. Boom, boom. Tyson Akoff off the bench. Boom, boom. Dylan Harper hit his first three threes. I mean, threes were raining down from the rack. This is a team that has struggled from three. They averaged 6.5 threes a game. They hit 8 in the first half. And Jeremiah Williams put the exclamation on the first half with a three at the buzzer. Swish. Rutgers goes into halftime. They're up 15. The place is going bananas. And I'm like, Penn State's not coming back from this. Rutgers is going to clamp down the D. I mean, the way they're playing, they're not going to be denied this game. And would you know it? Would you know it? Penn State comes back. All right. And I give them a lot of credit because I thought they were dead to right, but yet they came back. Rutgers went away from their three-point shooting. I'm not sure why. All right, but clearly they made an effort to get in the paint. It was like threes or paint, and I think it was 20 of their 26 points in the second half. All but 6 were in the paint. So they abandoned the three ball in the second half, which I thought was interesting. They scored in the paint. I mean, they were getting to the rim. Durkack, Harper, Jeremiah Williams, if they weren't finishing at the rack, they were at the rim. They were dishing off and making life miserable inside for Penn State. But to his credit, you know, to their credit, Penn State wouldn't go away. And it was Zach Hicks, the kid from Camden, New Jersey, who is out in Happy Valley, and he hit one three after another, six threes, 20 points, and kept Penn State in this game. So what was working in the first half didn't work in the second half for Rutgers, and suddenly Penn State chips away at that 17-point lead. Rutgers scored the first bucket of the second half and went up 17, but then, you know, this entire comeback, what was strange about it was that Baldwin did nothing. It was Hicks doing the damage, and Rutgers lost sight of their defense there. But they'll get better. They have to. And if anyone can do it, it's Steve Peichel. But, you know, for the first time really all season, we saw this team, what they're capable of doing defensively. Now they have to figure out how to do it for 40 minutes. So they needed defensive stance at the end. And they needed a monster game from Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. All right, these two freshmen collectively played their best game of the season. They combined for 39 points and 27 rebounds. Bailey had 15 points and a career-high 15 rebounds. Those 15 rebounds, the most rebounds by a Rutgers freshman. It tied the record for most rebounds by a Rutgers freshman in a Big Ten game. And many of those came from the offensive end of the second half. Tippins, all right? I have not seen Bailey this active on the glass all season. And finally, through all of Steve Peichel's harping, to get this 6'10 freak of an athlete to get in there and rebound like he's 6'10, we saw what Ace Bailey can do when he puts his mind to it and gets in there. All right, he's going to outjump a lot of people. He's going to just use his athleticism to get three or four extra rebounds a game. Just get in there and jump, man, jump. And he did it. So now we've seen what Ace Bailey can do when he puts his mind to it in the rebounding department. So to me, he was MVP of this game. And afterwards, Steve Peichel talked about the rebounding in general and the importance of what it was. Rutgers, plus 14 in the rebounding department. Their most impressive rebounding performance of the season. Here's the coach.
We did a good job on the backboards. It hasn't been a strength of ours. And when these guys do it, and Jordan's a rebounder too. So, you know, really happy with the backboards. And, you know, I love the way we played and attack rebounds too, especially at the end.
Yeah, collectively, the rebounding was there. And I got to give props once again to Dylan Harper. Man, I mean, listen, he is the best freshman in the country. We know that. There's no debate. Now the question is becoming, is he the best player in the country? If he keeps this up, he's a first-team All-American and a Wooden Award, Naismith Award finalist. 24 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists. Afterward, the Penn State head coach was, you know, praising him. He was asked about Dylan Harper, and he's like, man, I've seen him on film. I know all about him, but you don't realize how big this guy is until you get there. He's 6'6". He is a handful. Ace Baldwin is not guarding Dylan Harper. He's 6 feet tall. Harper's got him by 6 inches. You know, he is a matchup nightmare for most teams, unless you have a 6'4", 6'5 point guard. So, Harper, welcome back, big guy. All right, Harper and Bailey, I told you, I've said it. They are going to win Rutgers games this year just with their sheer talent. But here comes the but. I've also said they can't do it alone. And in this game, we saw the bench. We saw what the supporting cast can do. This was a total team effort. Jeremiah Williams, following his worst performance of the season, 2 points, inexcusable, senior captain at Ohio State, bounced back. All right. He needs to be their third leading scorer. He had 8 points in this game and some big buckets, big emotional plays, especially in the second half. He was tough. He was gritty. He was determined. That's what they need from their captain. Jordan Durkak came off the bench, like I said, and just does Jordan Durkak things. There was one play in the second half. Man, you know, you don't expect it, but he can explode and he can rise, right? He's 6'5". The kid can get up. He can dunk. He's athletic. Drives baseline. Contact at the rim, above the rim, finishes through contact for a three-point opportunity. I think he missed the free throw, all right? Rutgers missed like 10 free throws in this game. That has to get better. It almost hurt them in this game. The free throw shooting has to get better. But Durkak showed some athleticism there. He had 9 points off the bench. Williams had 8 points off the bench. Acuff, Hayes, They each had their 6 points in the first half when Rutgers built that 14-point halftime lead. Jamichael Davis with his defense. He also had 4 points, and Lathan Somerville. I mean, the bench was terrific. Rutgers does not win this game with all of this happening. The performance by the bench, the elite duo of Bailey and Harper doing what they did, the rebounding plus 14, and the defense, although it wasn't great for 40 minutes, it was good enough when it had to be. And that's when they got the stops down the stretch three times in the final 2 minutes. Penn State had the ball with a chance to tie or take the lead. Three times, Rutgers got stops or steals, and Bailey was in the middle of it all. They got the stops when they had to. They won the game. They found a way to win. That is the sign of a team that is starting to mature. They needed all of that. And afterwards, Pikul praised his bench and the entire team with their effort.
Our bench was outstanding, so they really came and helped us. You know, PJ and Acuff and Jordan now, you know, coming off the bench. Lathan, you know, some good minutes, you know, too, down the stretch. So really a good, you know, a good team win. And you know, that bench is really important. And if we can continue to get some consistency off of it, it really, really helps because those guys got some tools.
So Rutgers rights the ship. Three-game losing streak over, and this team can now focus on Seton Hall because no matter what you say, all right, so many of the faces are new. So many of the players in this game have never played in a Rutgers-Seton Hall game, so there's a little bit of juice that's not there. I'm going to admit it. Seton Hall is down as they've been at this point in years, so they're not coming in with a whole lot of juice. Rutgers has stumbled, is not exactly where they want to be or feel like they need to be, so they've underachieved to some point. So the buzz isn't quite there for this game, but trust me, when the ball is tipped, all 8,000 people inside Jersey Mike's Arena are not going to be thinking about a 5-5 team versus a 6-4 team. They're not. What they're going to be thinking about, if you're in red, is how are we going to beat Seton Hall? And the smattering of blue fans that are going to be there, they're thinking about, can we somehow upset this team like we did 2 years ago? The home team has lost each of the last 2 years. The better team on paper has lost each of the last 2 years at home. Can Rutgers reverse that trend, or will Seton Hall continue that trend? We shall see. Rutgers cannot afford to lose this game, a damaging quad three loss at home. What could it do for Seton Hall with a win? Time will tell, because this team needs a lot more than a road win at Rutgers to turn their season around and their fortunes around, but it would be a heck of a start. So I'll be there, Jersey Mike's Arena, 3 p.m., national TV, Rutgers taking on Seton Hall in the Garden State Hardwood Classic. All right, one more thing that I want to talk about on this podcast is the MAC, because I said last podcast it wouldn't surprise me if no team was 2-0 after the first weekend. Well, three teams remain in the MAC at unbeaten in conference play. Marist, Quinnipiac, and Merrimack all 2-0. You have St. Peter's, a surprise at 0-2, getting upset by Manhattan. And what a game by Manhattan. And their freshman, Sidnor, was just brilliant in this game as Manhattan beat St. Peter's. Will Sidnor from the Patrick School, the freshman from Manhattan, was a big reason why the Jaspers pulled off the upset against St. Peter's in Jersey City. And St. Peter's is, they've been knocked down 0-2, but we know how tough they can be, and they know how we know how resilient the Peacocks can be. So we'll see how they bounce back, but good for Quinnipiac. All right. To me, the preseason favorites did what they had to do in winning their first two games. And Amari Monroe, formerly Amari Tice, preseason first team in the MAC, set a record. 8 steals against Sacred Heart. Tied a school record with 8 steals. He had 17 points. Amazing, amazing performance. The first Quinnipiac Bobcat with 8 steals in a game since Jeremy Bishop in 2002. So just a monster. Scoring, rebounding, defending. Amari Monroe helped Quinnipiac take care of Sacred Heart. And listen, no shame in what happened with Sacred Heart losing at Quinnipiac. You could not have slated a tougher start for Sacred Heart. Opening game of MAC conference play. They're playing Iona at home, the team with more wins and more MAC championships than any team in conference history. And then they have to go to Quinnipiac, the preseason favorites. So they're hosting the team that was predicted third in the conference, and then they're going on the road to a team that was predicted to win the conference unanimously, and they finish 1-1. So Sacred Heart and Anthony Latina have to be feeling pretty good about being 1-1. You never want to feel pretty good about a loss, but his team battled. All right. Amiri Stewart is a player who's a dude for Sacred Heart. And in that loss, he had 18 points. But, you know, like Amari Monroe, Amiri Stewart is doing quite a bit for Sacred Heart. You know, they need him to play well. They need Tanner Thomas to play well. Anquan Hill has been a very nice transfer from St. Bonaventure. So that's a team that is better than where they were predicted in the conference at 13th. So we'll keep a close eye on the Pioneers as they start 1-1. Good start for them. Quinnipiac is where they need to be. And Iona, after losing to Sacred Heart, they then take on St. Peter's and beat St. Peter's. And this was one of their best performances of the season. Their leading scorer, DeJour Reeves, was magnificent. This is a guy who came in averaging almost 16 points a game, and he's a bucket getter. Had 19 points in this game. Really strong all-around performance. From distance, from the free throw line, 4 steals as well. Adam Njai, the freshman, is really turning out to be a great recruit. I think he had 18 or 19 points in that opening win over Princeton, if you remember. And Tobin Anderson has found a good one in the freshman from Cardinal Hayes. This was his fourth, fifth game, I think, in double figures. Third in the last four games. Finished with 16 points. He clearly is a player who belongs in the MAC right now and maybe going on to bigger and better things in his career in an era of NIL. He had a strong game. James Patterson had a strong game. The transfer from Stack had his first double-double on the Division I level with 18 points and 11 rebounds. So Patterson, you know, Tobin Anderson going to his Stack roots there, St. Thomas Aquinas, and the junior turned out a nice performance. Good three-headed monster for Iona with Reeves, Patterson, and Njai. Important win for Iona. I mean, man, you know, not that Tobin Anderson should be on the hot seat, but if they started 0-2 and 2-9, I mean, the rumblings were already happening, you know? I saw them. Is Tobin Anderson the right guy for this program? Listen, Tobin Anderson can coach, all right? It's just hard to keep rebuilding programs with 9, 10 guys every year, all right? Let's judge this team in March before we start, you know, crucifying them and killing them off in December. We know they're going to get better. How much better, we'll see. But this was a game against, you know, a very well-coached St. Peter's team and a team that has battled and a team that is certainly as battle-tested as any team in this MAC. That was an important win for Iona in beating the Peacocks. So there you go. There's your MAC report. The standings are wide open. We're only two games in. Only two teams remain undefeated in conference play. But you know as well as I do, doesn't matter where you finish in the regular season in this conference. Get to that postseason. Be one of the top 10 teams because only 10 will make the MAC tournament this year. Be one of those 10 teams and you have a chance in Atlantic City come March to represent the MAC in the NCAA tournament. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it was fun. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Jim Engels. We hope to get him on again real soon. Great catching up with the head coach of Columbia and going down memory lane with him during his time at Wagner and also NJIT. I want to thank Coach Engels. I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And thank you for sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovellis. Hey, don't forget to tell your friends, spread the word. I thank you for your loyalty and your listenership. Until next time, enjoy the games, everyone. So long.